Welcome back. FF Dynasty 260 proudly presents episode 14 of the Redraft Podcast. This week, we're recapping week 11 and looking forward to week 12. Pat is out, unfortunately, again tonight, so I'll be stepping in as host. I am the at-home dad. You can find me on Twitter at FF, the at-home dad. Tonight, I'm joined by a longtime contributor, but a longtime ghost. Finally welcoming him back to the podcast. Danny, say hello to everybody for us.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm back. I was around at the very beginning. I've been with FFD, for those who don't know me, for a while now. I took some time off to focus up on school, finishing up my software engineering degree. So now I'm back, and I definitely miss being around, and I'm looking forward to bringing some great information to you guys.
And where can they find you on Twitter, Danny?
That's at Fantasy Pipeline, and feel free to get me anytime. I'm always around.
Absolutely. And Mike is also with us tonight. Mike, tell the people where they can get in touch with you and get some of your great content.
Yep, absolutely. You guys can find me on Twitter at MikeSports22. Danny, welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Let's get this thing rolling, guys.
All right, let's do it. Before we jump into everything, though, I just want to take a moment to shout out our friends over at Drafters. Drafters is one of the newest apps for daily fantasy sports. It's a whole lot of fun. If you like FanDuel or DraftKings or Draft or anything like that, definitely check out Drafters. And when you do, make sure you sign up with the promo code FFD260 because you'll receive a free $10 that you can put towards any entry. And you want to make sure you're playing on this Thanksgiving because there is a $0 entry that you can win a signed Michael Thomas jersey. Michael Thomas has been killing it this year. If you're in playoff or even championship contention, a signed Michael Thomas jersey might just be the trophy you need for your fantasy championship this year. So definitely check that out. Again, it's Drafters, drafters.com. And the promo code is FFD260. Get that free $10. All right, so let's jump into injuries. There were some gruesome ones this week, fellas, starting with Alex Smith. And those of you that love coincidences, here's one. Alex Smith just destroyed his right leg. On the same day that years ago Joe Theismann had his leg destroyed by LT. So his season's over and possibly his whole career. Guys, anything you want to say to that besides, ugh.
Yeah, it was not pretty to watch live or on the replay. The other funny thing, well, I don't say funny, but the other coincidence is the score ended the exact same 23-21 as it did 30 years ago when Theismann got hurt. It's a real bummer for Alex Smith. Hopefully he decides to take on the rehab and try and come back. But he's got like $70 million guaranteed for injury. So at 34, 35 years old, he may say, you know, $70 million in the bank. I don't have to worry about rehab. I think I'm good. So it's really a devastating injury for him and for the Redskins as a whole.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be real hard to overcome that $70 million hit that he's going to have not playing even. So two more guys out for the season. We have Brandon LaFell with a torn Achilles tendon. We saw how that, you know, damaged players like Donta Foreman this past past season. So that's going to take him a while to get back in. Also OJ Howard messed up his ankle and is on the IR as well. We're going to be talking about how those kind of impact their teams moving forward as well. And then some other weird things, injuries that happened this week. You have Marcus Mariota's elbow. There's not really much information that we know except for that it's his elbow and he didn't play the second half versus the Colts. I wonder if this is in any way tied to the kind of nerve issue he had. Guys, did you hear anything about that, or is it just literally just that unknown?
It's the same elbow. I don't know if it's a nerve issue again or whatnot, but it's the same elbow. Mike Vrabel, the head coach, came out yesterday today and said that they're optimistic that he plays this week, but numerous fantasy sites have projected points for both him and the backup, Blaine Gabbert. So it's probably a 50-50 shot at this point. So I wouldn't bank on him playing this week, and obviously that downgrades everybody for Tennessee.
Yeah, this sounds like a lot you hear with baseball players, and yes, this is football, but how they always mask the elbow injury. It's a nerve. It's the UCL. This smells and looks like Tommy John. It's just rare that we see it in football, but it looks the same.
It's interesting. All right, let's turn to some guys that are up in the air. Let's look at one more kind of weird one was Todd Gurley. Watching that game, you were just asking yourself the whole time, where is Todd Gurley and all of my fantasy points? Turns out he rolled his ankle at some point in the game, but they expect him to be perfectly fine moving forward, even though he was limited in the game, which just goes to show that, you know, even though he's a complete stud, there's going to be games where you just are not going to get that kind of studly performance out of him.
Yeah, but even despite the fact that he was dinged up and didn't play a ton of the snaps like he normally does and get the workload he did, he still finishes the RB20 in PPR last week. So
yeah.
Gurley at 70% is better than pretty much everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, he fell from, what, top six every single week? Or was his worst performance was, what, top nine?
Yeah.
So to fall all the way to 20, I mean, that's that probably lost you a week, depending on how balanced your team is.
Probably did.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into some stuff for these early games for Thanksgiving. So the Lions play always on Thanksgiving. However, Kerryon Johnson and Marvin Jones might not play. Both of them dealing with, knee injuries. So it's possible that they could get in there, but it really looks a whole lot more like they're both going to be out for a couple of weeks. Jimmy Graham is dealing with a broken thumb. He's reportedly going to try and play through it. I don't know how you play through a broken thumb trying to catch passes from Aaron Rodgers, but he's gonna try. I would definitely watch that and definitely drop him a little bit in rankings for that. You also have Trubisky dealing with a shoulder issue. Roto World is saying that all signs are pointing towards him not playing this week. And then Tre'Quan Smith, which is really sad because he had such a good showing against the Eagles Sunday. He is looking doubtful to play Thursday as well. Didn't practice both Monday and Tuesday of this week. So those are injuries, guys. Anything you want to throw out there real quick before we jump into guys that we are moving around on our projections?
It's just going to really ruin a lot of Thanksgiving games with Alex Smith now being hurt. If Trubisky's a no-go, we're going to see, Chad Henne's the backup. I mean, you're going to go from three really good games a couple weeks ago to one and a half at best.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Sucks.
This just means you're going to have to spend more time with your family, which is going to be just probably painful for everyone. More turkey.
More turkey, yes.
All right, so let's jump into some quarterbacks here. Danny, as our guy coming back, because I like your pick here, who are you moving up at quarterback?
I'm moving Dak up, and especially for this week, he gets the Redskins. Mike, no offense.
I'm used to it. Let it rip.
You know, the Skins defense is ranked terribly against the pass. Over the last three games, I think they've allowed over something like 300 yards passing a game. I just see Dak having a good game, and it's Thanksgiving.
Yep, I 100% agree. Love that pick. I think the Cowboys, as long as Jason Garrett doesn't destroy them and Scott Linehan destroy them with bad play calling and just bad coaching, I expect the Cowboys to just eviscerate the Redskins this week.
You guys are a little more optimistic of how bad it's going to be. I think the Cowboys will win, but I think this is going to be a 4 or 5 point game. I think the Redskins are going to try and keep Dallas off the field, run the ball, it's going to be an ugly, you know, 2024 kind of game.
All right. I'd put money on that one. We'll talk offline on that one, Mike. I'm putting money on that guy. Dan, you want to go into your moving down since it ties into it directly as well?
Yeah, it's back in Washington. We're there with the Redskins. Colt McCoy or the former Jet Mark Sanchez. I mean, there's no one blocking for these guys. The O-line is mangled, and these two quarterbacks are nothing more than scout team quarterbacks getting a shot to play this week in the NFL. So it's going to be rough. And we don't do defenses, but Dallas's defense is definitely a play in DFS.
Yeah. I mean, that we talked about this last week. The Skins, just whole team is just being destroyed, decimated by injuries. So I have a quick question for you guys, which is kind of the situation that I'm looking at here. Is the Redskins were leading the division for basically getting into the playoffs. Somebody from the NFC East is getting a playoff spot, whether or not they deserve it or not. So who do you guys think wins the division, and in one sentence, why?
Well, I'll go first. I think it's more than likely Dallas's division to lose at this point. I wouldn't discount Washington entirely. They still have the one game lead. This team has played relatively good defense this year, and they have one of the more easier schedules the rest of the way out. Dallas does have, one really tough game the rest of the way out when they play New Orleans a week from Thursday. But outside of that, it's Washington, Philly, the Colts, Tampa, and New York. They should probably be the favorites. I would discount Philly because they still have to go to the Rams. They got Washington twice. So I think it's Dallas' division to lose, but we've seen, you know, crazy things happen, especially in this division. So I would say Dallas, most likely Washington second. Philly, I still think, is done.
Yeah. Danny, what about you?
I'm right with Mike on this one. I think it's Dallas' division, and as a New Yorker, that pains me to say. But yes, it's going to be theirs this year. They're going to take the NFC East. There's no competition really there. They are the most well put together team, and they're clicking at the right time. So it looks like it's going to be the Cowboys in the NFC East.
And as a Cowboys fan, even though I'm from New York as well, but don't get down with the Jets or the Giants. I fully agree. So I don't even need my sentence there. Cowboys. Mike, why don't you jump in with a quarterback that you're moving up?
Well, since we just talked about the NFC East, I am moving up Eli Manning mainly for this week. Surprisingly, since the Giants have hinted about giving rookie Kyle Lulata some game reps, Manning has played better. The last four games, he scored 17 or more fantasy points in three of them while averaging 17.5. This week, he gets the Eagles, who are the sixth friendliest team against opposing QBs, giving up about 20.5 a game. And we see that the Redskins' offensive line's all banged up. Well, they're as banged up as the Eagles' secondary. They're playing third and fourth string guys out there. So for those of you who don't have Mahomes or Jared Goff this week, Eli Manning is the perfect waiver wire pickup.
Mike, that's right. And as you hear in New York all the time, you can't spell elite without Eli, right? That's the same. He's starting to click.
Lost me there with the elite joke, but
you could spell garbage with Eli all for the first few.
Oh my God, it's been terrible.
It's terrible to be in New York City and listen to New York sports radio for 2 hours while commuting, and it's all just basically pooing on Eli when he does bad, and he has one good game, and it's like, see, this is what we needed. Eli's great again. It's phenomenal.
It's so bipolar the way they are with it. It's just crazy.
Absolutely. But I agree with you, Mike. I think he has a decent game here against the Eagles, especially because that Eagles defense is just so, so banged up. I don't see the Giants necessarily having a great rest of the season or really Eli having a great rest of the season, but maybe they are starting to put some stuff together.
Steph, on another note, Vegas has the odds that Eli retires after this season as the favorite.
I would agree.
Yeah, I feel like it's a safe bet. I don't see him going anywhere else. Like, I mean, I guess it's possible, but you know, maybe that talk of bringing him to Jacksonville to play with his former coach, possibly, but I don't think many people are going to invest in Eli this late in his career. So from somebody in the twilight of their career to somebody getting their first career start, I want to take a moment and just say Lamar Jackson. He broke a record for quarterback rushes in a game. He ran the ball 27 times for over 100 yards. We're not going to talk about the passing.
I was going to say, did he set the record for passing attempts? Lack thereof?
Nope, we're not going to talk about that at all. But Lamar Jackson, I'm going to prop him up with the thought that Flacco doesn't play. So if Flacco plays, like, don't take that advice. That's foolish advice. Don't think anything about him. I'm going to prop him up on just the basis that the Ravens' next game is against the Raiders, who are god-awful. So I can see Lamar Jackson having another opportunity here to have a big game in the same way that the Bengals' defense started the season really well, but then the Bengals' defense by the end of the season, or not end of the season yet, but currently, they're just so beat up, so just bad in all facets of defense that I think Lamar just really took advantage of it. You saw the Ravens be somewhat exciting, and I think a bunch of coaches trying to fight for, you know, another year of being coaches with the Ravens, I think they're going to try and go with exciting and bringing in fans and getting maybe hanging a couple of wins that they should get anyways on their record. I think they're going to go with Lamar Jackson. I think they're going to keep them exciting. I'm excited to watch this kid play, even if it's not for his passing.
Yeah, the only thing I worry about is, can he keep taking that kind of punishment, carrying the ball 27 times a game? Did you guys know that Michael Vick's career high in rushing attempts in a game was only 15?
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson damn near doubled in his first career game. And, if they can work him along to where he can be more effective in the passing game but use his legs as his primary weapon and then secondary go to the pass versus run, I like him a little bit more. 4-point touchdown leagues, I like him more than 6, obviously. But, yeah, I'm interested in watching him play just purely for the entertainment value. Fantasy-wise, I'm a little cooler on him than you are, Seth.
Yeah, and I mean, he's one of those guys where I think, like, you don't have Mahomes, you don't have Goff. You know, if you're one of those guys you didn't take a Breeze or a Newton or a Luck or a Rodgers or a Roethlisberger or one of these top guys, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel anyways. Why not pick up a guy that you know, bare minimum, he's going to rush the ball a lot and give you a whole lot of floor safety points?
Points are points. That's 100% right.
Yep. And in that same vein, I'm going to talk real quick about the guy that I'm moving down, and that's Blake Bortles, because I think he's no longer that guy that you're like, oh, God, oh, this is so gross, but I need somebody for a week, and he just is going to get garbage time touchdowns and garbage time yardage, and he's going to be a halfway serviceable quarterback, and it pains me to do it, but I'm going to pick him up and put him in as a bi-week replacement, or I'm streaming quarterbacks all season long, and let me get the Bortles. I think he's almost untouchable right now. I think the Jaguars and just that whole kind of setup is just bad for fantasy.
Yeah, they're done. They're looking at the draft. Jacksonville's just a mess. I wouldn't touch, especially this week with the Bills. Neither team's going to be able to score on the other one. This game's going to end 7-3 by somebody getting a pick six. It's just ugly. I don't want it.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it better. And Mike, go ahead and round out the quarterbacks for us with who you're moving down.
Well, last week I said to start Deshaun Watson versus the Redskins, and he scored just 9 fantasy points. My bad, guys. He's been, frankly, too inconsistent lately. Failing to throw for 250 yards in 5 straight games. has thrown two or fewer touchdowns in five of his last six. We all kind of got mesmerized by that great Thursday night game against the Dolphins, but then again, it's the Dolphins. So the matchup this week's not very good. Tennessee's tough on quarterbacks. I have him outside my top 15 this week. I just don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy where you get a little safety for rushing and whatnot when he does rush. But Houston is finding a way to string together wins, and that's great for them as an NFL team. But it's not necessarily great for you as a fantasy player with these guys on your roster, because they're stringing together wins by whatever means necessary. It's not the fantasy kind of gold of they're stringing together wins because they pass the ball, you know, 50 times and their quarterback's going to get you four touchdowns and 300 yards is almost a lock every week and their wide receiver is going to be great. You're kind of hit or miss with who's going to be that person that actually helps win them the game. And hopefully that's the person that you have on your fantasy team. So,
yeah, they don't have a structural way of winning. They're just kind of a little bit of DeAndre Hopkins and slap enough defense and extra pieces together to try and, you know, pull out a 24-21 kind of win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that defense is – when they get rolling, they get rolling.
Yeah.
But it's fun to watch. And then, Mike, one more from you. You're looking at rest of season here, huh? Why don't you go ahead and ask your question?
So the MVP conversation is kind of boiled down to three guys, Breeze, Goff, Mahomes. As much like to throw Gurley or Aaron Donald or Tyreek Hill, anybody else in there, it's always a QB award, and those three have been phenomenal this year. They're the top three in fantasy points scored, and they're pretty much all plug-and-play stars unless you have, you know, a really bad matchup or whatnot. But I was thinking, which guy should fantasy owners really want the rest of the way? And the correct answer is any of the above because they're elite. But Breeze's schedule to me is really, really appealing. They got the Falcons this week, at the Cowboys, Tampa Bay, Carolina, and then Pittsburgh to close out the championship week 16. Other than having to go on the road against Carolina, Breeze is probably a top four or five QB every week. You know, Goff's got a relatively easy schedule. Mahomes has got the toughest one. He's got to face the Ravens, the Chargers, and then go to Seattle. And while Mahomes is matchup-proof, you know, they may have already secured home field advantage. They may be not worrying about things as much. Seattle, I think, is going to be an underrated game for them. It's going to be them fighting for their playoff lives. In Seattle, they always play better there than on the road. You know, and it may boil down to how well these three QBs play the rest of the year that may determine who gets MVP.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. I really do think Breeze is going to take the MVP this year. His numbers this season so far have been phenomenal. He's just lighting it up. And with that offense, he's just making everybody so much better around them. Being an MVP, that's kind of what they do. No knock on Goff or Mahomes. They're both phenomenal. They're young. They're going to get their share of MVPs too. But this year, I think it's going to Breeze.
Yeah, they probably will give him the lifetime achievement MVP, kind of like they did Kobe in the back in the day. Where, you know, okay, he's on the way out. These young cats, they'll get theirs, you know, in the coming years. Let's give Breeze one for the road.
I agree.
Yeah, see, I feel like it could go either way of Breeze will get it, partly due to a relatively light schedule, minus that Cowboys matchup for the remainder of the season. Or it could go to Mahomes because there's just so much hype around him. And around the kind of changing offense of the NFL, that it may be that mindset of, but you know, this guy's the MVP, not just because he made the Chiefs absolutely incredible. He made them fun to watch. He made them exciting to watch. He, you know, he actually had a really like bad game against the Rams, even though they put up monster points. He had a pretty bad game. He had two strip sacks, one for a touchdown. He threw that one weird pick, that batted pick that was for a touchdown. Like, he scored 14 points for the other team.
Yeah, he had the two INTs in the last minute and a half of the game.
Yeah, but like he literally has so much appeal and so much fantasy appeal that I could almost see it being like one of the MVP things of like, this is where we want to move is the future of the NFL. So let's make this guy it even more so by giving him a rookie MVP.
Yeah, I can see that, but I think honestly he's going to have to break Peyton Manning's touchdown record, which he's on pace to come just short of it. But if he does that, I think it's a lock he's MVP. But I still think the writers who want to be able to make a storyline out of the MVP will make it Breeze lifetime achievement, knowing Mahomes could very easily win it next year.
Possibly. Not to say anything, but unless he gets hurt, that's always out there. But
knock on wood.
Knock on wood. He's so much fun to watch.
He is, and he's young. He's learning as he goes. So, you know, last night was a monster stage for him, and he showed it a little bit. He showed the inexperience, but he also showed the potential and the growth on how he was able to bounce back and step it up.
Oh, yeah. That game was just incredible. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you watched that game or at least saw the highlights of it, read about it, but that game was just absolutely incredible. I don't think we need to dive into it too much more. So let's go ahead and jump into some running backs here. I'll lead off and then let you guys jump into who you're moving up also. And I'm going to stick in my kind of Ravens train of thought here. I think the Ravens running backs, especially if Flacco is out, I expect the Ravens running backs to have a really good game this week. Whether that's Gus Edwards or whether that's Alex Collins or whether that is Lamar Jackson, they're going to run the ball. And they're going to run the ball well, partly because they're going up against the Raiders who – I mean, just whenever you can pick on the Raiders in fantasy, just do that and you'll be okay. But yeah, that's my Ravens thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. The Raiders have nailed it in. They're looking to the offseason. We went over this last week. Real quick to what I was interested about. Are we going to declare Gus Edwards a thing or is this a Jonas Gray one game fluke kind of thing?
Nope. Signed, sealed, delivered. It's a thing.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's moving forward with the new era. I think we're going to see a lot of Gus Edwards at the end, towards the end of the season, and we may very well see him involved a lot next year.
What was it? Jim Harbaugh, I think, has the quote where he said, "He's what we needed, a north-south runner." And if your head coach is saying he's what we needed, that's kind of, you know, putting the message right out there for people to pick up that Gus Edwards might be taking over Alex Collins' job. So I think Gus Edwards is a thing. If you saw him in the preseason, he looks really explosive. He looks like a really good quality running back for somebody that he's coming out of Rutgers. So that's right up here in the Northeast by Danny and I. I think he was undrafted or very late draft if he was drafted at all. I mean, the Ravens seem to like these guys that are undrafted like this, that are just hard-nosed workhorse type of guys that are going to run north and south and beat up the opposing defense. So I'm all on board for Gus Edwards being a RB2, maybe flex.
Yeah, I think it's more of a flex than RB2. I do think it's kind of a thing.
Yeah, maybe reverse that.
Yeah.
Flex, maybe RB2. Yeah, there.
Because he just all of a sudden came out last week and just shoot up all the snaps. And if Lamar Jackson sticks, and like you said, Harbaugh gives him a vote of confidence, his job's on the line, he's got to, you know, pull every trick out of the bag and make something happen. So, you know, we'll see indefinitely. I'm just kind of curious to see more in the longer-term picture. Is this going to be kind of like what we thought Alex Collins was last year? Was not much of a factor early on, and then really picked up towards the end. And then this year, we all were hyped up, and he's kind of been disappointment. Or did the Ravens say this Gus Williams thing's nice, but we're going to go out and we're going to go get a free agent back or draft somebody early on to be clearly the bell cow kind of guy.
Yeah. I mean, Alex Collins won me a championship last year because I picked him up at the right time and he became an RB2 with RB1 appeal. So this could be Gus Edwards 2018. Could be.
Yeah, it could be. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how many people still have their, you know, huge chunk of their fab money left to spend on someone like this.
Either fab or waiver priority. I think if he's out there, he's definitely worth a snag. Mike, why don't you tell us who you're moving up?
Well, give me some Mark Ingram. And coming off the bye, Ingram had struggled, averaging just 7 fantasy points per game in the first 3 games after the bye. However, the last 2 weeks, he has 32 touches, 265 scrimmage yards, 3 touchdowns, and just under 48 fantasy points. Ingram's been just great. I mean, New Orleans has been unstoppable. They're on a roll, and Ingram's finally getting involved in the offense. This week, the matchup's even better. Atlanta's the friendliest team against opposing running backs. And, you know, this game should be a shootout, but it still should be a game where there's plenty of work on the ground for Ingram and Kamara both. I have Ingram as an RB1 this week.
I like it. What about you, Danny?
Yeah, Ingram is pretty much a force to be reckoned with. Kamara just helps him out so much because he's the bruiser and Kamara's the lightning, the speed of it. And he's just going to be able to come in and feed off of that. And it's unstoppable, those two in the backfield. So it's like pick your poison.
Yeah, I think history has kind of shown that when you're a north-south runner like Mark Ingram is, an effective kind of lateral movement type of guy like Kamara is just makes you that much better because you have time to rest in between the times that you have to go in and literally collide with, you know, how many other opposing defenders. So I like it. The only concern is what is that split going to look like and does he disappear in those terms of splits? But as history has shown also, that's really tough to tell with this Saints team.
Yeah, it's going to be really game script dependent. We went over this last week. We're going to see what's going to happen. I think this week there's plenty of to go around for both him and Kamara, as well as Breeze in the passing game.
All right, and Danny, who are you moving up?
I'm moving Josh Adams up. The biggest holdback is the Eagles' offense and the fact that they don't really run the ball, but talent-wise, he may very well be the best back in that backfield. He pretty much was jammed up this year with Ajayi being there, but he is more of a LeGarrette Blunt-type role as a bruiser. And with Ajayi hurt, it sort of opened the door, and you're starting to see him walk through the door on it now. And he's going to be someone who's around long-term, even beyond this year for them, and probably will be their guy.
Yeah, I find it tough to support Josh Adams. Even though watching him play, he is definitely what looks like the best running back in that Eagles backfield. And I wish I had some kind of lingering, you know, either fab or a waiver priority or something like that where I could have picked him up sooner when I was first like, ooh, this Josh Adams kid, he looks like he's really got something going on here. But now it's one, he costs too much for what my concern is that the Eagles are always going to have a running back by committee, and where the Ingram Kamara kind of play off each other and help each other, the Josh Adams, Wendell Smallwood, Corey Clement, is Darren Sproles finally out of the picture for good or is he still in there? Like, it's just such a cluster. There's usually a word attached to the end of that, but just a cluster in Philly that I really like the kid, but I can't get 100% behind him. But I agree. Talent-wise and the way he looks when they finally give him the ball, totally agree with you, Danny.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have a little more concern about the RB committee and whatnot, but he's clearly the lead guy, and he can do the one thing the rest of those guys can't do, which is fill the LeGarrette Blunt role. If you told me I had to have one of those guys on my roster, it'd be Adams, and it wouldn't even be close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So let's go from one running back committee to another running back committee, and we'll stay with Danny and who you're dropping down.
It's Mike Davis. He was around. He was showing up for a few weeks, but now Rashad Penny finally showed up, and he showed up last week. There's too many mouths to feed. It's going to be Penny. They drafted Penny. They spent the draft pick on him. It's his role moving forward. Carson is still around, but I don't see enough slices of the pie to make Mike Davis worth rostering anymore, especially in redraft formats.
It's a bold take, Cotton. I mean, my thing is I would prefer not to have any involvement with Seattle running backs at all. That's my advice. Just don't do it. Don't do it if possible.
Yeah. I think we see him get involved more as the season goes on. I think he's really going to start to take over that role.
You think that's Rashad Penny's going to start taking over that role?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that's literally what everybody in the industry is hoping for, I feel like. But I just I don't know. I feel like you can't trust the coach. You can't trust the word that comes out of his mouth. You just never know what they're going to do, because Rashad Penny, what was it? He played three snaps of a series. He looked really good. He had a couple rushes. And then they didn't play him for like 20 minutes or something like that of the game. And you're like, wait, didn't Rashad Penny like have a good game? And then you look back in the stats and you're like, oh, he only touched the ball four times. It's just
it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's so concerning. But I agree with Mike Davis. But I'd throw the whole Seattle lot in there.
Yeah. I'm with Seth. I don't want to have anything to do with this backfield. You know, Pete Carroll's known to be telling you A and then do B. It's a mess. If you had to say one of those guys had the most stability going forward, I'd say it's Chris Carson. But Penny's cutting into Davis. Davis will cut into Penny next week. And then J.D. McKissick come off IR, and then week 13, they'll go off for 20 carries, 190 yards, and two touchdowns. We'll all go, what the hell? So, you know, just move on from the Seattle backfield.
Yeah, it's really funny. It sounds like we're arguing with Danny, but we're all just, like, really adding on to it.
It's just the mess
like
that it is.
Get rid of him. Get rid of Chris Carson. Just don't do it. Yes. Have Russell Wilson, and that's about it. All right, from there, let's jump into another kind of murky backfield that got even murkier. And I just need to take a moment. I was so hyped for Kerryon Johnson to be finally in a role where it looked like the Lions were like, yeah, we're going to give you the ball. We're going to hand it off to you. We're going to throw it to you out in space, and we're going to get you involved in all these different ways. And, oh, wait, you got hurt. And now we're back to, is it LeGarrette Blount? Is it Theo Riddick? Or is it Zach Zenner? Which one? So, Mike, I hope I didn't steal too much thunder there, but I just need to get the Kerryon Johnson just pain and suffering.
I know how you feel, Seth. I was excited finally seeing him get going, and then the biggest concern I had for him coming out of Auburn was the injuries, and lo and behold, he gets hurt. Thankfully, he escaped a major injury. It's just a knee sprain like we went over earlier. Hopefully, he's back week 13. But, you know, I don't want anything to do with the back. This is like Seattle. I don't want Blount. I don't want Riddick. I don't want Zenner. I don't want anybody they bring off the street. I don't want anything to do with it. The Bears are tough against running backs. You know, last week they held Dalvin Cook to just 2 fantasy points in PPR. It's just bad matchup, bad timing. No. Anybody who's saying, hey, well, we know Marvin Jones out and Kerryon Johnson, how about Riddick and a flex? I don't want nothing to do with it. It's Galladay or bust for me in Detroit this week.
Yeah, I agree. And a side note, a quick little bump here also, Cook should rebound this week.
Yes.
So nobody mentioned him here as a moving up or a propping up or anything like that. But the Bears' run defense is just really good, which is why you can't trust any of these Lion running backs right now. But Cook should have a rebound game here. All right, so the person that I'm dropping down is more of a tempering expectations type of guy, and that's Leonard Fournette. And it again, it pains me to say it, but he needed so much work in order to get his kind of fantasy output that he got this week. And even with that, none of it really looked that good. And it's one of these things where, like, you waited so long for him to finally be back on your team that you probably are forced to have him in your starting lineup now that he's finally back and healthy, because you probably piecemealed some kind of lineup together with running backs like Mike Davis, or, you know, hopefully not Theo Riddick or LeGarrette Blount, but, and, you know, any of these type of guys. And the problem is like, he needed so many touches. He was just not very effective. The Jacksonville just offense all in total just is kind of frightening. I mean, I just can't see him. I can't see him being that effective moving forward. Like, he only rushed for 3.4 yards per carry last week. And as the Jaguars get worse and worse because they gave up a little bit more and more, they lose and lose, it's going to get worse and worse. And then as a pile onto that, they're going up against the Bills defense, which is stingy against the run. So you have Fournette, who, you know, he rushed 28 times, but only for 95 yards.
Yeah.
It's tough.
And their offensive line's banged up. They just, I believe, lost a center for the rest of the year. Their left tackle's been out since 4 or 5. Yeah, this game, especially this week, is just two teams who want to fall on top of each other and get out of there as quickly as possible. Expect a 7-3 finish with not a lot of fancy points to go around.
Definitely. I even featured Fournette in my sit-on piece last week over at FFD, and I couldn't believe it as I was trying to figure out who someone you would sit. I was like, yeah, it's Fournette. Like, it's just not there. He's struggling. He's not so much struggling. It could be the offense. It could be the offensive line issues. Either way, starting him's a big risk, especially if you're fighting for something this late or trying to lock something up.
Yeah, and I mean, he actually had a good week. He had a great week last week. He was the sixth best running back in PPR with 22 points. But the
it took a lot.
It took so much. And at some point, like, they're not going to be able to give him the ball that much. And unless they have just completely, like, you know what, Bortles, we're just going to take the loss and just keep giving it to Fournette. But I don't know why they would do that, because he's only in his second year. Like, why would you destroy the running back that is probably going to be the face of your franchise? Maybe not the face of your franchise, but going to be your franchise running back for at least two more years, barring any major injuries or anything like that. Why run him into the ground like that?
And he's fragile.
Yeah, if you're just going to lose anyways.
Going back all the way to college, he's fragile. He's had that leg and that ankle have been a problem since day one at LSU. So it's why stress it? Why add more to it? Save it for when you need it.
Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna skip my situations piece here. You know what? No, I'm not. We're going to do this super fast. You ready?
Looking forward to this.
You ready? Top five running backs 2019.
Redraft?
In redraft, top five drafted running backs in 2019. Who are they? We'll go Mike first, then Danny, and then I'll see how far off my guys are.
All right, let's see. I would say Gurley's one, Saquon's two, Kamara's three. Depending upon where Bell lands, he'd be four, but let's just take him out for the picture for right now. Let's say Connor four. I'm going to say Kareem Hunt five.
Interesting,
okay. So I just have a top five. I haven't really sat down to rank them one through five, but it's Gurley, Hunt, Saquon, Kamara, and I'm keeping Zeke there at five too in that top five.
Oh, shit, I totally forgot Zeke.
See, you know what's funny?
There's too many of these good backs.
I agree with most of what you're saying, but Melvin Gordon.
Well, I was going to put him there at five, but I figured he never gets any respect. He'll probably won't get any more next year.
That, you know what? That's I can see that being the case also. I definitely see Gurley, Saquon, Gordon, Zeke. See, the whole Bell Connor thing, I think there's going to be so much up in the air there that's going to force him to fall a little bit. And then Kamara, like I would say Kamara's going to be there. And then probably you probably get like Hunt, Connor, Bell kind of mixed in there too. That's, oh, it's so exciting to think about already next season, isn't it?
The whole first round could be running backs, you could argue, next year. Or at the very least, 10 of the 12 picks should be running backs. I mean, we just ran off a couple. We didn't – I forgot Zeke. We didn't include David Johnson. We didn't include, you know, Dalvin Cook, Fournette. There's just so many good young backs out there right now that's like – McCaffrey, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that. Those were mostly – you know, round two guys. I think you're...
Yeah, and...
Next year it's going to be fun.
Ingram's gone after this year, I think, too.
What was that, Danny?
I think Ingram's gone after this year, too. I think he's a free agent, so that just opens up the door even more for Kamara.
And that might open up the door for Ingram to be a running back one somewhere also, like somebody that you get a little bit later in the draft that'll be a great running back one.
Absolutely.
All right, let's transition over to... wide receivers. So some fun wide receivers out there this week. I want to start with Danny, because this one made me chuckle a little bit when I first saw it, and then I was like, actually, you know what? I get it. So go ahead, Danny. Who are you propping up as your wide receiver this week?
Oakland is decimated by injuries, and the rookie Marcel Atman has a shot to definitely carve out a role in that offense, just because opportunity is gold. And he did last week. He had a solid week. He produced, and we're just trying to prop people up for this week, is the way I took this section as. I wasn't looking long term. So if you're that hurt and you need someone who's going to see targets are points, opportunities for points, and that's what you want. He's probably going to see a share of targets.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when I first saw it, I was like, really? And then it's like, oh, he's going to be the only guy really out there. And him and Jalen...
Rashard,
there we go. My student's name just blacked out the hole, actually. you know, like, besides Jalen Rashard and Marcel Atman, like, they're going to have to throw it somewhere. Like... They're gonna be losing, and they're gonna have to throw it. So,
yeah. Well, last week Aitman was fourth or third in the team in targets, just barely behind Roberts and Cook, 7-6, and then 5 for Aitman, one ahead of Rashard. So, yeah. No, I liked Aitman. I thought he was way underdrafted. They need somebody who has some kind of, you know, over the top speed in that offense. Jordy Nelson may be back this week, but with Martavis Bryant likely done for the year, and we already talked about Brandon LaFell earlier. They got nothing to play for, so they should give this kid a shot. And I think in your deeper leagues, he's worth a speculative ad.
Absolutely.
And you went rookie also, Mike. So why don't you go with your rookie next?
So Calvin Ridley is the guy I'm moving up this week. Now, fantasy owners have to keep an eye on the injury report as he's dealing with a thigh injury. And again, it's a Thanksgiving game, so it's a short week. Hopefully he's good to go, because the matchup is just phenomenal. Saints, we've beaten them all year long. Friendliest team against pretty much every position in football. They've allowed opposing wide receivers to score 55 or more PPR points in 40% of their games this season, including against the Saints back in week 3, where Ridley had a career-high 40.5 points. The only guy that's secondary that should concern anybody is Marshon Lattimore, and he's going to be on Julio. So hopefully Ridley has the second coming of the 3-touchdown performance game on Thanksgiving and gives us some entertainment. And fantasy owner is a high upside wide receiver too.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons have a high-powered offense. They're going up against a team that they can score against, and they're going to have to score against. So, yeah.
It should be a, you know, I don't want to say it's going to be like Monday night's game with the Rams and the Chiefs. We're not going to get 106 points, 105 points again. But could we see this game finish in the high 70s or the 80s? I think so. So
yeah, definitely 70s. I could easily see that.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun game to watch.
And I went rookie as well. I went DJ Moore out in Carolina. He's getting just more and more and more involved in the offense and doing more and more with it. So I think he's finally kind of coming into his own. I think he's one of these guys that is making a really big late season push. That is a guy that you can probably get relatively cheap still, because, you know, he's not their de facto. He's their de facto number one, but not like the number one on paper right now for him. But that Carolina offense is interesting. It's interesting how they use it. And the Seahawks defense is not necessarily feared anymore. So there's going to be opportunities for DJ Moore to be able to exploit that this week. And I think, like I said, I think he's just going to continue to get more and more involved. And you know, you're going to get a really strong, solid wide receiver out of this kid.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's still people out there who think it's Devin Funchess' role as the one, or they don't have a de facto one because they're going to, you know, McCaffrey and Olsen and whatnot. So if you can get DJ Moore while you can, go ahead, because he's starting to show up and he's got all kinds of explosibility that meshes well with that offense.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go. I'm going to stick with it, go with another rookie here. And an old dude altogether. I'm going with both Kiki QT and Demaryius Thomas. One of them is probably going to be good this week, but I'm staying away from both of them because I don't want to flip that coin. I think QT has had big week, bad week, bad week. And it's hard to tell when that's going to happen. Demaryius Thomas, it looked like he was clicking in the offense. It looked like they were getting some kind of, you know, rhythm with him. But then this past week, he put up a big old goose egg for us. So someone's going to do well opposite Hopkins. It's going to happen. But which of these two is it going to be? I don't know. And I'd rather not take the chance on either of them right now unless I have to. And if I had to, I'd probably go QT over Demaryius Thomas right now. Just because of the big games that QT has already had in the past.
Yeah, I totally agree. Since the first quarter against Denver a couple weeks back, Demaryius Thomas' quick revenge game where he had the 3 catches for 61 yards, he hasn't done anything since. No passes, nothing. 1 target last week. I think Kiki Kute is the better play. They're going to use him in the middle of the field more than Demaryius Thomas on the outside. He's just, I don't know what's going on with him. He was so good last year, and then this year he's been wildly inconsistent, changed his team, and nothing has changed. So for me, I'd rather have Kiki. He's in the mid wide receiver 3 range for me this week. DT's outside the top 40. So it's the DeAndre Hopkins show. And then, like you said, do you really want to have to flip the coin between the two and see who has what kind of performance? I'd rather just stay away.
Yeah. And just to add on to that, Demaryius Thomas has been so consistent for years. He's been the 1,000-yard receiver with, you know, basically me punting him the ball down the field. Like,
yeah,
his quarterbacks have been atrocious, and he still puts up 1,000 yards on an annual basis. This season, is this the end of Demaryius Thomas as we knew it in fantasy years ago? It kind of looks like it, but, you know, maybe he rebounds at some point. Who knows? But, like I said, I don't want to make the call between those two this week.
I hear you. I don't want to touch either of those two either.
Yeah. So let's go with another kind of cheat here of somebody that did more than just a single person. They're moving down. And Mike, stop copying me. But you're going Packers wide receivers. Talk to us a little bit about why you're moving them down.
Well, I could have just picked MVS because Cobb, knowing him, probably won't play again. But I decided to go with all the Packers not named Devontae Adams, just to be clear across the board. Adams is obviously matchup proof, even though he's going against Xavier Rhodes. I don't care. I'm still playing him. Cobb, MVS, St. Brown, they should be buried on your bench, or in the case of Brown and Cobb, probably dropped. Vikings are tough against receivers, fourth toughest in the league. Cobb has missed five of the last seven games. MVS had just one catch last week on three targets. And St. Brown has scored more than 5.5 fantasy points just once this year. The Packers seem to be adamant about throwing the ball to Adams 1,000 times a game, using Aaron Jones finally, and everybody else, well, the hell with them. So with a tough matchup this week, I don't want anything to do with Green Bay outside of Rodgers, Adams, and Aaron Jones.
And they're going to need Aaron Jones to be able to do anything, I feel like, this week against the Vikings, because if they can't get a running game going and they just keep showing pass, 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 they're going to get annihilated by the Vikings. So they have got to commit to getting Aaron Jones started to be able to get Aaron Rodgers to be able to do play actions and rollouts and sprint outs and be able to get, you know, be able to get him to use the mobility that he has. And yeah, this is one of those games where it could be really close or it could turn kind of bad quickly and bad for the Packers, not the Vikings, which is weird to say given the caliber of, you know, just Aaron Rodgers alone, the caliber of him. It's weird to say that this could be a bloodbath where he's on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be potentially ugly, or even more so, it's just going to be a game where neither team's going to really pull away from the other one because both offenses have their issues. And, you know, like you said, if they can't establish some sort of play-action game with Aaron Jones, they're going to be done by halftime.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting game. Not necessarily exciting, but definitely interesting. And Danny, which wide receiver are you dropping?
This one hurts. It took me a second to write it out, but I had to. It's Nelson Agholor. I loved Agholor. I loved him this season. I thought the potential is still there, but he's just going to get phased out with Golden Tate coming over and Jeffrey's involved. He saw two targets last week. He's just, there's no value there to make him startable anymore. You just have to accept it, especially in a redraft, that he's not going to help you at all win.
Yeah, you should have dropped Agholor 2 or 3 weeks ago. I mean, it's Philly's offense is not even a shell of what it was last year. Golden Tate's there now. Yeah, it's Aguilar's time is come and gone.
Yeah, probably. I mean, unless there's some kind of injury that happens, yeah, redraft mode, you gotta cut ties with him, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, not for me because I don't really have any attachment to it, but unfortunately for you, Danny.
Yeah, no, I thought he had a lot of talent, a lot of potential. I still think he does. I just think the system and Golden Tate coming over really just cut right into his load.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. So two quick situations we're kind of paying attention to. So thinking about the Eagles, Mike, why don't you talk about a wide receiver that just lit up the Eagles D?
Sir, I phrased the question as, is Traquan Smith legit or a product of the Eagles' poor defense? And what I should say by legit is, you know, how legit is he? You know, we all tend to agree he should be picked up off waivers and that offense, you know, you want a piece of that no matter if it's him, Thomas, Kamara, Ingram, Breeze, whatever. But how much are you guys attributing his 31.5-point game Sunday to the fact that the Eagles are rolling out fourth and fifth string DBs against him? Or is that how much of that is really his coming out party?
I think it's a combination of both. The talent is there. The Eagles defense helped exemplify that the talent is there. But against a stronger defense and better corners, he will struggle, at least for now. And I'm also seeing that he didn't practice today, so it's starting to wonder if he may be questionable for the week coming up.
Yeah, with a Thanksgiving game, it's going to be a short week for him. But if he is good to go, and you know, if he's still on your waiver wire by some chance when you guys are listening to this, go grab him, because the matchup against Atlanta on Thanksgiving and then Tampa in 2 weeks to start the fantasy playoffs, he is worth picking up for those two games by himself. Atlanta and Tampa, two of the bottom three teams against receivers.
Yeah, and I'd say it's probably like two-thirds him versus the Eagles. And if you watch some of the catches that he makes where he makes full extension to, you know, to just make a beautiful, beautiful grab. And it's not like something that's going to be all over highlight reels, but just, you know, great hands, great control of the body. Those type of things are things that you can see consistently in really strong players. And you could see that on display with the Saints versus the Eagles. So I think Traquan is legit. I think your issue that you'll always be facing is whether or not the Saints distribute the ball to him or not.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, why if Traquan was so, you know, all of a sudden good, why did they bother bringing Dez and now Brandon Marshall? I still have a little bit concerns that this is too much byproduct of the Eagles versus him himself. And also, are we at all worried about the number of touches he's going to get with Thomas and Kamara taking up the majority of the passing attack?
Probably. I mean, I was addressing this question legit as in just a legitimate option, not necessarily a legitimate fantasy option. So maybe I misconstrued that. I think Traquan, fantasy-wise, is going to be super tough to play unless you play in like one of these, like, you know, three wide receiver double flex type of leagues where you are sticking a guy in there that's like, please go off this week.
Yeah, with big play bonuses. Yeah, no, I agree. He's more valuable to them in reality than this fantasy wise. It's just, especially now we're done with the bye weeks. It's going to be tough for me to trust him and play him unless I'm chasing points after this week or against Tampa in 2 weeks.
Or I was just going to say, or trying to predict that matchup where you're like, okay, I think he's going to go off this week. So I just want to jump in real quickly here. Want to bring up a guy that I've been high on for a while, ever since he made an amazing one-handed catch reaching around a defender in the end zone. This was back in his rookie year, and this is Tyreek Hill. And you don't usually think about Tyreek Hill making plays like that. You think about Tyreek Hill making plays where, oh, you know, the defender fell down and he got wide open, and that's why he got a big play. Are we ready to change the narrative yet on Tyreek Hill? So the narrative that keeps following Tyreek Hill around all the time is he's a boom or bust guy, because he's fast and he's not a complete wide receiver. He's going to have really big games, but then duds for the majority of the season. Are you ready to change that narrative to actually say, like, Tyreek Hill is a complete wide receiver or something in between?
I'm not worried about, you know, saying he's not a complete receiver. I've been on that train for a while. You know, there's some things obviously Tyreek Hill can't do that like Mike Evans could do with his size and whatnot. But in terms of, he's not just a speedster; he's a complete all around receiver. He does make those tough catches. He's not just purely a guy who makes things happen with speed. He's improved as a route runner. The Chiefs have better used him this year. So I think Tyreek Hill's finally getting the respect he deserves. He's probably a top 7 right receiver in the league. And I don't know where you've been hearing this narrative that he's just a speedster, because I've always considered him an elite guy since his rookie year.
Yeah, definitely. I think he is a receiver. He's not, to quote Jason, to tell Jalen Ramsey, he's wrong. He's not a return specialist. He is a wide receiver, and he is a force to be reckoned with in the NFL. Yeah.
Well, go on Twitter at any point and just watch the debates that happen between Tyreek Hill and, like, anybody that wants to bring up any stat about Tyreek Hill, and immediately you get both sides of that argument. Oh,
it's so polarizing. It's either you love him or you hate him.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And I think it's time to really start talking about Tyreek Hill as a legitimate wide receiver one. I think you have to at this point. Like, the fact that the fact that he can make a defender fall to be wide open to catch a 50-yard bomb is incredible. And the fact that he did it with Alex Smith and Pat Mahomes, and he made Alex Smith look so much better last year. Like, I think we have to start talking about him as a wide receiver one. I don't think you can sleep on him any further.
Are you talking about him as a wide receiver one in terms of fantasy, or the top 12 overall receiver in terms of on the field? Because if anybody's arguing he's not a top 12 fantasy receiver, they just stop playing fantasy football. He's the top receiver right now, and obviously he can go off for 40 points with his eyes shut. If you want to argue with me, he may be the 12th or 13th, 14th best pure receiver in the league. I have a debate with you, but I can see the argument. But if you're talking fantasy, no, he's a top 7 or 8 guy easily.
Yeah, definitely fantasy. And, I mean, he's like, think about, he's only in his third year. He's like...
And look at the upside they got going forward with this great trio.
He could be that wide receiver one, you know, next year. But let's take this moment now, move on to tight ends. Let's go with Mike. Who are you propping up here at your tight end position?
I'm propping up David Njoku. And I know he's been a disappointment for fantasy owners the last 3 weeks, having 12 total fantasy points. I don't know what's going on in Cleveland. They fired the offensive coordinator, they fired Hugh Jackson, and just ever since then, it seems like Njoku's going nowhere. But hopefully they took advantage of the bye week, got things mellowed out, got the offense in gear. He and Baker Mayfield got on the same page a little bit more. And Njoku can go back to averaging double-digit fantasy points. This is the week, if it's going to happen, it should happen. The Bengals give up just under 16 a game. You know, they are bad against tight ends. They just put Preston Brown, their linebacker, on IR. They're all banged up on defense, like I mentioned earlier. If Njoku's going to show any value the rest of the way forward and redraft, it has to be this week. If it's not, I'm ready to drop him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Njoku's just raw physical ability makes him a viable tight end one at any point. It's just a matter of can Cleveland un-Cleveland their game plan so that they can be effective.
Yeah, that's, you know, since they had to change, the two running backs have been phenomenal, Duke and Nick Chubb, but it's left everybody else. Landry's a ghost. Callaway's not there. You know, it's frustrating for those of us who had high hopes for the Browns offense coming into the year, and now they're winning better. They're winning more productively in their losses, but fantasy-wise, we're getting killed outside the running back spot.
Yeah, and side note, Callaway may have been a mirage, but we'll talk about that some other time. Mike, why don't you hit Evan Engram because you wanted to drop him down also, and then Danny and I have some conversations, and we have some conversations about moving people forward for the rest of the season. So why don't you hit Evan Engram next?
Sure, I'm looking forward to that. But real quick, Evan Engram, like many of us expected, he's regressed this year, obviously. Only scored 8.5 fantasy points last week against the Bucs, even though I propped him up last week, and he just totally let me down. You know, the Eagles are tough on tight ends. You know, the Giants, they don't have anything to play for. Engram still may be dealing with that knee injury he suffered early in the year. I got him outside my top 15 tight ends this week, and as bad as the position is, it's kind of mind-boggling I have him that low. I'm just done with him. You know, Dynasty, you're honestly going to hold on to him, redraft, time to put him back, move on. In fact, the guy you guys are going to talk about next, I would drop Engram for and go pick him up.
Really?
That's funny, Mike.
That's really interesting.
That is my argument for Cameron Brate. And there's two reasons why you should go out and get Cameron Brate. One is you own Travis Kelce and he's on a bye this week and you need a tight end. And the other one is you need a tight end and there's no one out there, but Cameron Brate is there.
Yeah, I definitely for this week, I like Brate. You know, if, like you said, you got the Kelce guy. You're a Kelce owner, you want to go get somebody this week, and tight end position is all banged up and whatnot. Brate just all of a sudden now jumping to the top 12 conversation with O.J. Howard going on IR.
Yeah, my thing is I'm just not ready to buy Brate right now. I think and it's not so much Brate, because Brate has proved that he's effective. When he was in, you know, in the number one spot earlier in the season, he had three straight games with a touchdown in each game. My thing though is literally his receptions, 3-3-1-3-1-3-1-2, and yardage all below 35 yards. And yeah, he was competing with OJ Howard, and there was a little bit of time when he wasn't competing with OJ Howard, and there, you know, he had those three games where he got his three touchdowns, and after that, nothing. The tight end landscape is abysmal. So if you want to plant your flag in Cameron Brate, which that sounds really weird, but if that's the guy that you if that's the guy that you want to be like, he's my guy, more power to you. Go with him. Run with him. My guy this past week was, you know, Ricky Seals Jones, and he ruined my advice to a close friend and ruined one of my teams. So, you know, you're going to have guys like that right now, especially because the tight end position is so weak, that if you want to go with the Brate, more power to you. I'm just not ready to buy it. And partly because I just have no idea what Tampa Bay is doing. It's just that whole team is so – they're hot, they're cold, they're boiling hot, they're ice cold, they're somewhere in between again. And it's like you just never know which one you're going to get. Or
which quarterback you're going to get for the whole game.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. you literally go from extreme to extreme so fast. And both of the quarterbacks are extreme quarterbacks. Where you either get like Winston coming in throwing four touchdowns and looking amazing, or, you know, Winston throwing three picks and getting sat for Fitzpatrick. But then Fitzpatrick can look amazing and throw four touchdowns, or throw four interceptions and get sat for Winston. So it's not, you know, not necessarily a Brate thing, but a whole Tampa Bay thing that I'm not ready to deal with.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm just, the tight end position is so beat up, and given the fact that he's going to have solo tight end role basically now,
exactly,
with OJ gone, it gives me confidence in him. But I'm with you. I want to be a little more optimistic or pessimistic about it this week for the long haul. But if you got Kelce on a bye and you just need a 1 week filler, yeah, I like Brate. I think it's a good matchup.
I mean, why not throw him in there? I'm throwing him down because I'm not ready to be that guy that's like, yeah, Brate, he's a guy that I want to have in there. I'm probably gonna, you know, I'd probably go with Engram, maybe. I don't know. That's a tough call because Engram, somebody probably has that they've had since drafting. So he's, you know, he's not going to be as big an option there. Honestly, I would rather go with the guy that you want to talk about, Mike, is the situation that you're watching for rest of the season, and that's Vance McDonald. Like, I'd be so much happier to...
I agree. I'd rather have McDonald over Brate. For anybody who's thinking Brate's just going to be this top seven or eight option, he's not. He's, you know, in the 11, 12, 13 kind of ballpark range. He's streaming based on the matchup, or if your tight end position is really weak on the waiver wire, you may want to just grab him and hold on to him. But because, like we said, Tampa's offense can be so explosive, but then again, so volatile at the same time. But McDonald, I kind of like him. He's one of my starts for this week against Denver, who struggles against tight ends. And his schedule the rest of the way out is, not, I want to say really good, but it's pretty decent. Denver, the Chargers, Oakland, the Patriots, and the Saints. And aside of, you know, the Saints at week 16, all the other games are either positive or neutral based. So, you know, with fantasy players on the corner, now's the time to kind of grab guys off the waiver wire even a week or two early. Because, you know, you're going to not worry about the bottom part of your bench. Buys are over. So go ahead and grab, you know, DSTs, kickers, even quarterbacks a week or two in advance, knowing you're going to play them in certain matchups to avoid getting bit by, you know, low fab money or late in the traditional waiver system. So I like McDonald's schedule. Like I said, you know, him, Brate. I just don't like Engram. I'm sorry. Giants are a mess. So McDonald's one of my sneaky options for the rest of the season at tight end because of the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, he literally helped me win a game this week because I was like, oh, I have pure dookie for tight end. Who's on the waiver wire? Oh, Vance is there. You know what? Let me go for gold and see if I can get anything with Vance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he ended up being, you know, a very viable tight end. He was the tight end 8 with 11, almost 12 points in PPR. So,
he's got touchdowns in back-to-back games with, you know, the offense kind of taking its fold. Now that we know Bell's not showing up, it's Brown, Connor, Juju, and he's kind of rolled into that fourth option. So, you know, we know Pittsburgh can put up points. They've been on a 5-game winning streak or something. So, you know, you could do worse than him at tight end. I mean, as we saw this past week, you know, Gerald Everett and Higbee both scored 12 points, and it's like, where the hell these guys come from? So,
yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to get that from
the
Rams again. But, yeah, I agree. I think McDonald's is – he's a good rest-of-season kind of play there.
Yes.
Especially if you don't have one of the top guys, which is actually a perfect segue into the two people that I'm going to be talking about. because I'm thinking rest-of-season and, you know, basically right away – everybody wants to, you know, talk smack about Ebron because he put up a 0-pointer. And yes, that probably hurt you a lot and you're probably upset. And we're going to have a little, you know, mediation for that right now. It's okay to feel angry. But let's be honest, Ebron is going to come back. And Andrew Luck's going to throw 4 touchdowns, basically on average, at least 3 touchdowns on average to end out the season. And Ebron is probably going to get one of them each game, if not getting some kind of yardage, because that's what the Colts do. This was a fluke game for Ebron, the same way that the week before, it was a fluke that he had a rushing touchdown. If you're going to take the positive, you know, anomalies, you got to take the negative anomalies as well. And unfortunately, this past week was a negative anomaly. And that's like, that's gambling, fantasy football, which is basically gambling over 16 weeks or a lifetime if you do dynasty. Like, that's what it is. You got to take the positive anomalies with the negative anomalies. And, you know, hopefully you're making enough, you know, of the right plays that it evens out positive for you in the end. But Ebron and Doyle are both going to be fine rest of season. I think the Colts do enough with their tight ends that they're going to be just fine. I mean, in a week where neither of them were top 12, Jack Doyle still put up 8.3. fantasy points in PPR, which is only 0.6 away from Greg Olsen, who was the tight end 10. So he's literally, you know, a fraction away from the tight end 10 spot. And like I said, Ebron, this was an anomalous game, the same way that his, you know, 30-point game is an anomalous game. You can expect both of these guys to put up tight end when numbers, you know, maybe not both at the same time, maybe not top tight end one numbers where they're scoring 19, 20, you know, 20 plus points. But if you look at the bottom of the tight end one range where all you need is 8 points, 8.5 points to be a tight end one, both Doyle and Ebron should be able to get you there on a pretty weekly basis, especially when you look at the rest of their schedule. They go against the Dolphins, who allow 8 points on average. The Jags allow almost 10 points on average. The Texans allow almost 9 points on average. The Cowboys allow almost 8 points on average. The worst team in terms of fantasy points allowed to tight ends they face is in week 16 against the Giants. They're 21st against the tight end, allowing just shy of 7 points per week. these guys are going to be good for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. There's no team in the league that uses their tight ends more than the Colts. Last week was just kind of a fluke, and they only had 5 total targets to the tight end position, as opposed to the week beforehand. They had 10 and then 11 the week before that. It was just kind of a T.Y. Hilton and surprisingly Dontrell Inman kind of game. Like you said, we always say in this position, it's touchdown or bust for a lot of these guys. And if you have to bank on somebody getting a touchdown week in and week out for this Colts offense, it's going to be Ebron. I'm with you. Both these guys are tight end ones. I'm both as low end ones for the rest of the year. And, you know, either way, you're going to be fine because, like we said, this position is such a mess. And unless you have Kelce, Ertz, Kittle, you know, you're going to be dealing with, you know, guys who, if they get a touchdown, they're finishing in the top 7 or 8. And even despite Ebron's 0 point adding last week, he's still the tight end 4 for the season, which tells you, okay, he's been great all year long. One bad game, move on. Not a big deal.
And literally, you're going to get a bad game out of anybody. Any tight end and any player. I mean, we talked about Gurley. You know, his bad game was from, you know, running back 9 or better on average to running back 20. Like, you know, you get bad games from guys for whatever reason. So
sometimes crap just happens and you just got to hope it's at a well opportune time versus fighting for the playoffs. But yeah, Ebron and Doyle, both are guys I like. Colts, you know, they like to use those two tight ends since. And in deeper leagues, what's his name? Marley Ali Cox or whatever, right? Oh, Mo Ali Cox.
Mo Ali Cox.
He's a nice, you know, dynasty stash or deeper league kind of thing. So, because they will use all 3.
Oh yeah, and it's that's why it's hard to tell which one's going to be good. But you make the smart play. The smart play is who's going to get a touchdown? Probably Ebron. Who's going to get a whole lot of receiving yardage? Probably Doyle.
Doyle.
Both of them are probably going to finish around 8 plus points. Play them both. Not on the same team though.
Like, yeah, two tight end league or something. Great. Yeah. Don't play one the flex.
Yeah,
no.
Don't do that.
Yes.
All right. So that wraps up our tight ends. Again, that's a weird phrase. That wraps up our section on tight ends. So let's jump down into looking at week 12. So after their monster game, the Chiefs and the Rams get to go on bye. If you have any of those players, make the smart play. Don't play them.
I'm going to play them all out of respect for what they did last week. I don't care if it's out of respect. I'm going to give them another week.
Honestly, if you got half the points that they scored this past week, you'd probably still be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Like not great, but like okay.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
All right. So, Mike, why don't you go ahead and lead us off? What game are you excited about watching in Week 12?
Well, I'm looking forward to watching the mini-me version of that game Monday night between the Falcons and the Saints on Thanksgiving. After you've stuffed your face full of turkey and you're sitting on the couch debating about a food coma or not, turn on the game and then see what happens because you won't fall asleep. We probably won't see 105 points like we did Monday, but like we went over earlier, 70s, maybe even 80s is probably where we're going to hit the total at. Breeze and Matt Ryan are my top 2 QBs this week. And while I normally go down and run through all the rankings of everybody who's in the game, I'm going to make you go check out my rankings this week. You can find them as the pinned tweet on my Twitter page at MikeSports22, along with all my other stuff. It's Thanksgiving, guys. Stuff will be out early. It should be out by the time you guys listen to this. Go check it out. Last week before the playoffs, you got to win.
Yeah, definitely go check those out. Check out all the rankings on FFT260.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Lots of great stuff always going out there. Danny, which game are you looking forward to in Week 12?
I'm looking forward to the Seahawks and the Panthers game. It's going to be a gritty game. It's going to be one of those dogfights back and forth. The over-under, they have this game at 47. I think it's going to be pretty close to that mark. I see it like 27-24 kind of final. I can't tell you who would win. Cam is probably going to have a really great game. CMC, DJ Moore, Russell Wilson's going to be Russell Wilson. So it's just going to be exciting to watch all around. It's just going to be a good time.
Just don't play any of those running backs.
No. I'm not starting any of them. They're moving up, but I'm not starting them.
Yeah. And I'm going to go with my NFC East division winning Cowboys against the Redskins on Turkey Day. It's a tradition. It's an establishment. It is part of Thanksgiving. And if it's not part of your Thanksgiving, well, you should make it part of your Thanksgiving this week, this year, and moving forward. Because watching the Lions and Cowboys play every Thanksgiving is just part of Thanksgiving. So make sure you get into one of those two games. And I would definitely say the Cowboys-Skins, probably because that Cowboys offense is clicking, that Cowboys defense is clicking. And unfortunately for the Redskins, it's probably going to be a huge victory for the Cowboys. I know, Mike, you think it's going to go a different way, but maybe that'll make it even more exciting to watch.
Yeah, I think this is still Dallas' game to win. I think Washington's just finally had the final nail in the coffin with all the injuries on offense. I think the spread's like at 7.5, and I just think that's way too much. I think this is going to be a dogfight. We're going to see a 24-20 kind of game. Still think Dallas comes out on top, but if you ask me to take a swing on this game, I'd probably take the Redskins in the points.
Interesting. Well, like I said, we'll have to talk off air and figure out how we're going to work that out.
I want to hear what you guys come up with on this one, because I'm with you on this one. I think the Cowboys are going to win this game.
Yeah. All right. So that wraps up our 14th episode. Thank you all for listening. And, guys, say good night.
Good night, folks. Thanks for joining us.
Night, everyone. Have a great time, or good morning by the time you guys hear this. Thanks for listening to us. Hope the rest of the week is good and you get some W's from us.
Absolutely. Good night, and welcome back, Danny. Great to have you here.